You're about to listen to the Complete Developer Podcast, the podcast by coders, for coders, about all aspects of life as a developer.
I'm Will, the curmudgeonly experienced developer.
And I'm Beege, the optimistic newbie developer.
Complete Developer Podcast is supported by listeners like you. We are now on Patreon at www.patreon.com/Complete Developer Podcast.
Welcome to another episode of Complete Developer Podcast. This week, we're starting something new, a look into one developer's journey. Now, periodically, we're going to be interviewing developers about their journey into the world of software development. And for our first journey, we've invited our friend and audio guru, Jason Belcher. We'll be talking about his journey from blue-collar work into software development. But before we get started, Will, what have you been fighting this week?
I have been fighting my own crankiness severely.
That's like a perpetual battle for you.
Yeah. No, it's usually for the people around me. We're finishing up a project at work, and it's getting pretty close, and we're at the point now that all the bugs are just little tedious things. And so, like, you get the irritation of having to fix a bug, but you don't get, like, that sense of victory because it's something stupid, and it's like that all day. And I was just getting more and more cranky through the week last week. I mean, well, you were here last Monday. You know how cranky I was then. And towards, you know, by the end of the week, I mean, I was just like enraged. And I finally realized, you know, the problem is that I'm not solving more difficult problems. I'm solving just little piddly stuff that just irritates me. And so what I ended up doing is doing a ton of programming over the weekend on my own stuff. And yeah, you know, I got a book on doing microservices and .NET Core and just started working my way through that. And, you know, between fighting Linux and fighting that, like, I actually felt better when I went in this morning.
Awesome.
So, yeah. How about you, Jason?
Well, I've been fighting PHP. I've got a phone interview on Thursday, and I have to cram and learn as much PHP as I possibly can because it's for a front-end developer position with PHP. So
I'm sorry.
I'm hating myself because PHP, as you know, is very ugly, and it doesn't, coming from JavaScript, it doesn't make as much sense. There's a lot of things that are similar, but there's like a million zillion weird named functions to learn, and it's ugly.
Yeah.
So
that was one of the things that kind of turned me off about it as well, because it's got the older style, and I guess I don't know if there's any IDEs that really do a good job with it. Seems like
VS Code. That's what I'm setting up right now.
Yeah, VS Code will do it, and then there's PHP Mine, I think, which is the JetBrains
one. Yeah, I've heard of that one.
But yeah, it's. It's definitely a culture shock when you are used to JavaScript and you're used to the rich environment that's around that, switching to something else. So, yeah, I feel your pain, man.
But hey, I got to do what I got to do. And, you know, it seems like no matter what I do, I can't escape PHP. You know, WordPress uses it, you know, and pretty much any web agency, a web studio that does websites, you know, and that's all they do, they're going to use PHP to some degree. So I have to learn pretty much.
Unfortunately, that's the case. Well, I am officially an employee of the state of Tennessee as of today.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. It's exciting to see the fruition of a lot of hard work that I did to get here.
Yeah, it's been, what, 2 years and some change?
Yeah, exactly.
I'm trying to think when you actually started coding. It was the summertime.
Yeah, let's see. It was
2014.
Yeah, it was towards the end of 2014.
So, yeah.
Though I will be honest, recently, I feel more like the Orkin man than anything, as all I've been doing lately is killing bugs. I feel your frustration and your pain. We are very close to finishing the project that I started on when I started as a contractor with the state. And actually, later this week, I'll be starting sprint one of my next project. It's kind of cool because I'm going into this project as a full state employee.
But what kind of benefits come with that?
All sorts of nice stuff like health insurance, 401k, free bus passes.
37 nice. And a half hour work week.
Yeah.
Don't forget that one.
Yeah, that one's kind of nice too.
I'm doing good when I keep mine under 60.
Well, yeah, I understand what you're talking about with your frustration, because last week I was getting really frustrated with having to fix a lot of just silly bugs and little things that I thought, all right, after a really rough day last Thursday, I was like, I'm going to go home and I'm going to do something new and different and decided to try and learn a new framework, the YAML, which isn't completely new because it's C Sharp Razor to build statically generated sites. That was even more painful.
So that's basically like EJS syntax, sort of?
You know how Hexo does static
Hexo
sites?
Does EJS, that's what he's saying.
Yeah, it's like EJS. And
It's not exactly okay. EJS. It's similar, though.
Yeah, it's C-sharp based.
Yeah. So instead of JavaScript in your functions, you're doing C-sharp.
Well, that's what I kind of meant. Just you're putting actual C-sharp code within those percent brackets.
Mm-hmm. Kind of like that, yeah.
And it's exactly. Server-side rendered, all that good stuff.
Well, it's actually static. It's a static site generation framework.
So it generates...
Just like Hexo, okay.
Yeah, just like Hexo, yeah. But with all that said, I have something that, Will, your wife might actually find interesting for IoTs.
Okay.
So let's go ahead and roll Jason's music.
Yeah, how about that?
Oh, goodness.
This week for IoTs, I have something kind of fun for the runner in your life. Something that Will's wife might find really interesting, and it's called the RunScribe. It's a wearable IoT device for your shoes that gives details into the kinetics of your feet. You put it on the back of your shoes, and it measures your foot movements with an accelerometer, a gyroscope, and a magnetic compass. Data includes graphs of pitch, yaw, and roll, and the force each time your foot hits the ground. All of this can be tracked in an app that you can download on your phone. So, Will, who's talking to us this week?
We got a tweet from Joe Zach. At Complete Dev Pod, need help convincing my wife that I need a whiteboard in my shower. Please assist. Love the episode. Yeah, I don't know how much I can help him there.
My suggestion would be to just put one in there and see if she notices.
I think probably what you need is actually like a whiteboard that's got like shampoo and stuff that you can hang.
Yeah, there you go.
You can find one like that where it's an improvement for her and it just happens to come with a whiteboard. You might be able to swing it. I don't have one in my shower. That's actually a place to get away from everything.
But you have your best ideas in the shower.
Mine usually, they're in the same room, but they're not in the shower.
Well, hey, thanks, Joe. Shoot us a DM with your contact information because we've got a Complete Developer water bottle just for you. And guys, if you'd like your very own Complete Developer water bottle, leave us a review in iTunes or comment on the website or any of our social media. We post all of our episodes to Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and Google+. We're also on Path and Tumblr. I want to take a moment right now to remind y'all that our friend Bethany Adams has released her second book, and so to celebrate, we're running another contest where we'll be giving away an autographed copy of one of her books, and it'll be the winner's choice. We'll be announcing the winner the first episode in May. To enter, leave us a review in iTunes. We love seeing those 5 stars. This episode starts a new series that we're calling A Developer's Journey, where we'll be talking with different developers about their journey into and within software development. The episodes in the series will come out periodically, and each one will focus on a different developer's journey. Today, we're interviewing our friend Jason Belcher. Jason is an aspiring software developer and has also done a lot of help to improve the audio quality on this podcast. Just go back and listen to our first few episodes to...
Yeah, and I think is the biggest contribution to the audio quality improvement is the IoT's intro music.
Yes.
Versus the stuff that was on the beginning for you.
I want to add something. The actual guitar is my father. He's a fingerstyle guitarist, and I took his track and I remixed it. He had no idea I was going to do something like that, and I gave it to him. He actually doesn't like that version. He's not into the like stuff. He's pretty old school. But yeah, that's not me playing guitar. Just want to bring that out. I remixed the track, put the beats on there, all the organs in the background, all the extra stuff, mm-hmm. and fleshed out an entire track.
It's really awesome. I mean, I enjoy the clip that we have here, but I also enjoy the full song that you sent me. But we first met Jason down in Atlanta at the very first Code Newbie Atlanta meetup. And we've pretty much kept in touch nearly every day since. So before we get started, I just want to tell you guys that Will and I are going to be at Music City Code here in Nashville. This is Nashville's premier polyglot software conference on June 1st, 2nd, and 3rd at Vanderbilt University.
Yeah, it's really cool that we're actually finally getting a real conference together. Because, you know, when I was coming up through the tech, there wasn't much here.
Yeah, we went last year. It was at our alma mater, Lipscomb. I think we talked about that in a couple episodes. And it was a lot of fun. Looking forward to seeing what they've got going on this year.
Yeah. So, Jason.
Yes, sir.
Wow. How'd you get started in software development?
Well, it really kind of started way back when I was in high school, really. Got my first computer when I was, I don't know, 15, 16. Got into gaming, and shortly after that, I got into what's called mod trackers, which relates to why I'm a musician as well. If you're not familiar with it, it's basically what we had before modern DAWs that you're using, like Reaper or Cubase. And basically to enter effects to manipulate little wave files, you had to enter the hexadecimal address of the effect. So everything was in hexadecimal, and basically your screen was just a bunch of, it was just basically looked like kind of like an Excel grid, spreadsheet grid, and it would scroll down the screen and you would enter notes and effects and program music that way. In fact, the first Unreal game, they use a bunch of mods for the background music. So I got into that, and so I did a lot of programming of music through the late 90s. And so I've kind of always been a nerd and have been around computers, and that's really what got me into computers to begin with. And I kind of discovered...
Well, that's kind of interesting, because our last guest got into computers through math, and I've heard it said that music is the math of the ears.
It is. I mean, if you listen to, I don't know, the best example would be Bach. His symmetry in the way that he creates his music is, if you listen to it and you study at the same time, I swear you get more out of your study session, because it almost like it creates this resonance with your mind. And you know what I'm trying to say? It's you can definitely hear the math in that type of classical music. But really, I mean, without going into a whole bunch of details about music theory, the way you determine a scale key or what chord to use based on that key, it is some basic math. And, you know, the golden ratio is related to how you tune individual notes on the Western scale. It's incredibly involved with math.
Yeah, that's kind of cool.
I can see that.
I like to listen to dubstep and EDM when I'm studying.
I forget. Yeah.
Well, that's the place that it's most effective, I think. Although, like, you're getting into the music thing, I kind of switch what I listen to depending on what kind of code I'm writing, because like old gangster rap is great for JavaScript.
You're already angry.
Yeah, because I'm usually, and then, you know, heavy metal for C# usually seems to work out all right. And then I tend to go for a little bit of classical on SQL, unless I'm really getting, you know, really cranky.
And then, of course, when you just got to get stuff done.
Ace of base,
yeah.
Oh, my God, really?
Yeah, it works like a champ.
I saw the sign.
That's the one.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. I think it's because we started messing with code around that time, and that was like a good rhythm. And for some dead gum reason, we've got that now.
It's reggae. It's electronic reggae. That's the beat.
I just remember sitting in my dad's office programming in QBasic, listening to that CD, because I could just get into a flow when listening to it. The other thing I can really get into a flow with is when I'm listening to Lindsey Stirling, because she's just got that good beat that gets you going.
Yeah, another one I've been liking lately is Apocalyptica, their cult album. Yeah.
Never heard of that.
It's good. I don't know what you call it. I don't really class my music very well. So
I don't either. Music is, there's good music and there's bad music with me. I don't really distinguish, because once you start putting, things in boxes,
You miss the things. So you get the boxes.
Yeah. I mean, you really truly just need to just leave the labels alone when listening to music and just, decide for yourself what sounds good or what doesn't.
So, how did that transition from the love of music and computers into actually trying to code?
I don't know, about 5 or 6 years ago, I started seeing that there was a trend towards everyone learning to code, you know, and I decided to try it out. And the first time I tried, I was like, wait, this is way too hard. I'm just not smart enough to do this. But I came back to it, a year or two later after that, decided to give it another go, tried out, Ruby, Python, and then settled on JavaScript. But it just appealed to me because I've always been a creative person. I always like to build things as well as destroy things. Destroyed all my toys as a kid. I would take them apart to see how they worked. And I'm also a plumber, a commercial pool plumber. And, I'm constantly building entire pump room builds. You know, so that includes the pump, the filter, all the piping, doing all the hydraulic calculations to turn into the health department, because it has to be a certain flow rate with a certain turnover rate. You don't need to know all that, but so it just kind of illustrates that, you know, I like to build stuff. And that's really, that's all this is with programming, you're building things. It's not actual tangible things you can touch, but you're still building from the ground up, and I really enjoy seeing the fruits of my labors.
So what sort of stuff have you built so far?
We'll see. You could find all this stuff. I'm sure you can list, all of my links and whatnot. But the first real program I did was a hydraulic calculator, and I really kind of made that to solve a personal problem of a lot of cognitive overhead. I just didn't want to do all these redundant math calculations to come up with what the health department wanted. So I just wrote a calculator that takes all of it into account and gives you the values at the end. You just hit a button after you enter all the initial values, and it gives you your flow rate, your turnover rate, your what they call feet of head, which is friction. And then you just take those values and you put it in the form and you turn it into the health department. So it's a completely useless program to anyone outside of a very small subset of jobs.
Yeah, it shows your ability, though.
Yeah, if you saw the code, I leave the code there to show everybody how I've improved, because the code is...
Yeah.
There's global variables everywhere, and there's just four loops hanging out in the middle of nowhere, and nothing is structured. I had no idea what a design pattern was. I basically Googled my way through the entire thing, and I took I did a little research on some of the calculations are done via a chart. You just look at the chart and you look over and you look at what the value is. And it's they're just empirical, values based on a formula, an empirical formula. And so I looked that formula up, and not knowing the advanced math, I had to figure out what all the funny symbols were. I figured that out, and I converted that to a function in JavaScript that actually does everything. And then I put it all in this one master constructor function, which is a big mistake to do. What do they call those? God functions or something?
Yeah, we call it God objects.
Yeah.
That's what they would.
Highly coupled. I mean, everything. I mean, it's just a whole bunch of spaghetti. But I actually did use one design pattern on I guess you could call it the back end of this front end program, which does all the calculations. What I messed up on was the UI. And if you go look at the UI, it's just a mess. Like, I tried to refactor it. I can't, because it's insane.
I remember that app. You sent me the link to it, and I'm like, I was like, well, he's kind of green. But yeah, the thing is you actually were getting stuff done.
I can definitely say, as we've been going through and debugging, and just sort of dealing with the rewrite of the views for the app that I'm working on at work, going through that and debugging some of the controllers and stuff like that, and then like, who wrote this crap? Oh, wait, that was me.
I know what you mean. I want to punch myself.
When I first started, I was on a team of three developers, and I was looking at the code going, is this where the purely back-end developer was trying to learn some front-end? And then I looked at the commit history, and I was like, nope, that was all me.
Yeah.
I totally know what you mean about looking back at your code and leaving it up there to show how far you've grown and how far you've come along since then, because I do that with my code too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, don't get me wrong. I'm still proud of that code in that I actually accomplished it without knowing much JavaScript. I knew almost nothing. And that's the thing I want to get across to everyone that's listening that may be new, is that you don't have to know everything before you can actually be useful. Google's your friend. If you know how to strategically Google things, if you're what do they call it? First world ignorant or first order ignorant,
yeah,
about all of it. If you have a good big picture view of what you might need to do to get it accomplished, Google will finish that for you. It will finish the thought for you, and you just go from there. And you know, granted, I didn't copy code. I didn't do the code monkey thing. I actually, you know, came up with my own code, but for all of the, you know, all the concepts I had to learn, you know, I just figured it out. I didn't use any kind of tutorials to do it. Tutorials are great for a little bit of stuff to get you familiar with generally, but
they're a great starting point, really.
Yeah, great starting points. But like after that, if you don't branch out and go build something, then you're kind of just copying code over and over and over. So now you're not learning anything.
Will can tell you all about my WinForms calculator.
Oh, my goodness.
That's cool.
Like, I think I brought, like, my graphing calculator downstairs and just handed it to him and was like, look, dude, just do a different app.
Well, it was like, I've talked about this on the show before, but it was one of those things where I found a tutorial to just build a basic calculator, and then I built out from there as I learned various things.
Mm-hmm.
And it was months of just building on that one app, adding more and more. And so Will was just like, dude, you've got to do something else. Anything else.
Well, the other thing too is you were approaching getting pigeonholed, which is kind of painful. So Jason,
what do you mean pigeonholed?
Well, if he'd have continued on WebForms, because WinForms, that's an older technology, you know, in the .NET framework.
Oh, I got you. And okay.
Not as many people are using it. And so if he spent too much time, he would have a bunch of time in something that is not super useful, and he wouldn't be able to get a job in it, because part of the goal was to get him to employment so he could actually be the one buying the beer for the recording days.
So it would be like, you know, learning VB Basic, you know, right now.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So what's been giving you the biggest heartburn on the learning process right now?
Memory retention. It's one of those things where, you know, I understand things fast and I go, okay, got it, and move on, you know? And then I forget it and then I have to go relearn it. I'm going back and relearning over and over. Like, I just learned this, but I forgot it, so I got to go back and learn it again. And so I'm chasing my tail with that kind of thing. And I don't know, fatigue, my mild dyslexia. I'm a visual, you know, kind of learner. So if I don't visualize it, you know, if I can't get some kind of visual representation, some kind of concrete representation in my mind, I tend to not understand it well.
I'm right there with you, man. The other thing that always got me was like the tutorials or when I started, it was books. Like, you didn't, it's like, oh, I'm going to go on Gopher and go find a programming tutorial. Like, that's, you know, that wasn't really an option, but like you get books and they were out of date or they had errors and you'd have to like try to troubleshoot your way through it.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the tutorials out there, frankly, are not any better. Like the stuff I went through Friday night was riddled with errors. And like, if it was a new programmer, they would not have gotten through that.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, that's what I went through with YAML. I eventually had to go out and find a GitHub repo of somebody that had actually done it to find out what the tutorial had wrong.
Yeah, I mean, tutorials are so hit and miss, and you don't know if you're learning the wrong thing or some old, you know, practice, and you end up with a mess, and you don't know why, you know, things aren't working the way you think they should. Maybe you have the wrong version of whatever dependency you got.
That was part of my problem. I had a preview version of .NET Core. That's what burned me this weekend. But the other thing I find too is that a lot of them, even from major vendors like Microsoft, like, I mean, some of their tips for like optimizing SQL Server are dated and they don't work with SQL 2016. I mean, I've seen like any of their MSDN articles where they're talking about like opening and closing database connections, they don't dispose the connection. So if there's ever an error thrown, you have a leak. I mean, it's just stuff like that everywhere.
And they don't tend to warn you when they change things, do they?
No, not really.
Not that anybody else does either, I guess, but
yeah, but it's easier to hate them for it. That's
yeah, that's true.
Because it's usually really, really inconvenient the way they change things, too.
So now that we've kind of talked about some of your more difficult things, Jason, what's been your biggest win since you started learning to code?
Well, I just graduated from the front-end web developer nano degree with Udacity. I finished six projects there and did it in about 4 months. They tell you to take 6 to 12, but you know, there was kind of incentive for me to hurry up with that because it costs $200 a month. So
yeah,
it's a big, it's a big accomplishment. And I hurried up and did it because, you know, that hurts really bad, which also brings me to something that I wanted to mention. Make sure there is an incentive there. If you're trying to learn this stuff, it really helped me to actually be charged $200 a month because I had to sit down every single day and do something because I knew, you know, there was money coming out of my pocket every single day with that program. So in a way, it pushed me towards the goal quicker.
Yeah.
It's a good thing.
Well, hey, congratulations on that, by the way. That's really awesome. That's a big success there.
It's one of those things where I just want to describe the way they do it, the way the learning process works there. They have a lot of overlap between the projects, interleaved learning, if you will. Beej, do you know anything about modern learning techniques? But they've done a lot of research on how we actually learn. So they do a lot of quizzing and they do a lot of interleaved learning. And what I mean by that is the portfolio project and the resume project had a lot of overlap. The portfolio project was mostly HTML and CSS. And the resume project, the second project, was HTML, CSS, and a little bit of jQuery, but mostly HTML and CSS still.
So you kind of get the spaced repetition concept.
Exactly. Exactly. I read a book recently that relates to this called Make It Stick. I don't know. It was three authors that wrote this book, and they go into the research on how we actually learn. So that's how I know that they were using it, because I had just read that book. And I was like, hey, this is cool. They actually know what they're doing when it comes to teaching, because I don't know if you've noticed, but if you've ever taken a Udemy course and you pick the wrong one, they may know what they're doing, but they sure as heck don't know how to teach.
That's very true. I've taken quite a few Udemy courses because they put them on sale and you can get, you know, I think you're getting a good deal, and then you get in there and you're like, yeah, this wasn't worth the $10 I spent on it.
Exactly. And the way they get you is they jack it up to $300. So they think that they make you think that you're getting a great deal and, you know, $300. But if you don't know which courses to pick on Udemy, you're hosed. Anyway, I'm not going to rag on Udemy anymore. You know, they do have some great courses.
Oh, yeah. I've taken some that I paid $10, $15 for that really were worth $300.
Yeah. Well, it's like you're playing the lottery, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. But with Udacity, it's a totally different thing, because as you finish these projects, you're then code reviewed, and they're pretty tough. You know, when you get that certificate, it's worth something. It's not like you just finish a Udemy course and you get a little a thing at the end. I mean, you could do that just by letting it run until it ends. But with this program, the code reviews are tough. They give you a spec sheet at the very beginning that you're supposed to follow, and if you don't hit every single bullet point in that spec sheet, they'll kick it back to you. Once you have all those criteria met, then they'll actually give you the code review and either pass or fail you based on how well you did. And they give you a lot of advice. And it's one of those things that, you know, if you don't have a, you know, ready-made mentor to hit you over the head, like you did, Beej, with Will, then it's really, really valuable to have them. And that's, well, I mean, the Udacity is free. If you want to take the courses for free, you can take them for free. But you're not getting the code reviews, which is what is worth $200 to me.
Just to set the record straight, I never actually hit Beach over the head. I just threatened.
Yeah, he kicked me in the shins a few times, but never hit me in the head.
A little kick in the shins. Well,
you took it to the dojo, didn't you?
Yeah.
Doesn't count there, though, does it?
we spar on occasion. It's been a while. So I guess with that said, you know, the Udemy learning resources were pretty good for you. Did you find any others that were?
Udacity.
Oh.
But I will say, because I've just beat up on Udemy.
Sorry.
I beat up on Udemy, so I'm just going to say something good. You know, okay. There were several full-stack JavaScript courses that I took through Udemy that really helped me understand Express.js, which is a little hard if you're coming to it fresh. I mean, it's totally open. It's not like Rails where you just, you know, everything's set up and you just spin it up and just edit stuff. With Express, it's totally open to you how you make your application. So, yeah, I mean, Udemy's got some great courses. You just got to know which ones to pick.
Well, as I understand it, Udacity, the one that you got the nano degree from, mm-hmm. started by a couple of students at Stanford who wanted to provide free university-level courses online, and then that grew into the program that you went through.
Yes. You know more than I do, actually, on that.
I'm doing a talk. I'm doing a talk on getting into coding as a second career tomorrow morning, so.
That's one of those things I need to get better at that I've noticed you're really good at, Beach, is actual research and then staying organized. I'm so haphazard, it seems like, sometimes.
Years and years of doing it the wrong way.
Well, maybe a little bit of the med school helped out with that.
Yes, a lot.
Is there anything else that I've forgotten to say about Udacity?
I think so.
Were there any other resources that you used while you were learning?
Well, right now I'm using Treehouse. Mm-hmm. They have a similar model to Udacity, but you don't get any of the code reviews or anything like that. I guess you could take the tech. They have a tech degree that I think is competing with Udacity. It's also $200 a month, and you do projects as you take the courses. But I'm just doing their premium plan, and it works out pretty good. They have frequent quizzing after the videos, and you code along in their little editor, that kind of thing. So it's really great for beginners as well as advanced people. And everything else, it's like I just Google random blogs. I do a lot of Googling.
Yeah. I still do, and I've done it my entire career. I mean, that's the best way to find the people you can learn from. So, well, I haven't done Googling my entire career because, you know, there was Dogpile and there was all those other search engines, including Yahoo.
AltaVista.
Yeah, Lycos.
Excite. Come on, guys. You can't forget about Excite.
Yeah.
It's so exciting. I don't know anything about Excite. All I remember is AltaVista and Yahoo.
There's, they're all gone now.
They got Googled.
Oh, I forgot Free Code Camp. Actually, that's where I started to get serious. Was I discovered Free Code Camp, and I did some of their initial, you know, exercises in HTML and CSS as well as JavaScript. And their algorithm section is phenomenal. If you can actually get through their algorithms, then you pretty much know JavaScript. And they even have the tests. Well, they used to have the tests below that you could add to and edit, which reminds me that it's a little bit like Coder Wars. Have you used that, Beach?
Yes, I have.
It's awesome. It's an awesome platform, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is cool. I like it.
It's a lot better than HackerRank, because I couldn't even figure out how to do Hello World in JavaScript with that.
I haven't used that one, so I wouldn't know. But yeah, I've done Coder Wars, and Code Combat is kind of fun, too.
Oh, I've tried that. I do like Coder Wars a little better, though. It's a little more...
Yeah, it's more... Point. Yeah, but Code Combat is great if you're just trying to distract someone from the troubles in their life and see if they're interested in coding. It's really great.
True. Very true.
But on the note of Free Code Camp, Will and I have actually been spending some time with the organizer for the Nashville meetup of Free Code Camp.
Nice.
And we're going to have him on the show in a probably about 3 or 4 weeks. I'm not sure exactly when, but it'll be down the line. He's going to come on and kind of talk about his experience with that. So it's really cool that you mentioned that, because we can, you know.
Oh, I also wanted to, throw a shout out to John Sonmez. His soft skills book really kind of helped me get my head together with everything, and just kind of me a nice little kick in the butt when it comes to not making any more excuses about learning to code. I mean, and just doing it. And he has a lot of advice about techniques to learn, like the process that he goes through.
So you have the physical copy? You didn't listen to it?
I've got the physical copy, and he's got a little illustration on here.
Oh, man. You have got to listen to the audio, because he goes into more detail on some of the chapters. It just kind of goes off topic from the book, but he talks about stuff that he's learned since publishing the book. And it's just, it's phenomenal. I've already listened to it twice.
Yeah, John's stuff is really good.
I follow these steps. It's got a step ladder here. If anybody's interested, it's on chapter 29, steps 1 through 6, do these once. And step 1, get the big picture. Step 2, determine the scope. Step 3, define success. Step 4, find resources. Step 5, create a learning plan. Filter resources. And then learn enough to get started. And then it goes through into detail about how to do that. It goes into the last steps. Learn enough to get started. Play around. Learn enough to do something useful. And then teach it, which is what I'm trying to do right now. I've started a blog, and it's about learning things through teaching it. So, and it works. I mean, if you can teach something, or if you can explain it to someone else, then you actually know what you're doing. And if you don't have anybody around, just tell it to your cat. That's what I do.
Well, I mean, I still learn a lot from John's stuff, you know, even with all the years of experience. Like, you know, as probably most of our audience knows, I'm kind of working on a book right now myself. And periodically I'll run into stuff where I realize I've gotten a very negative attitude towards certain things, like HR departments. I was writing a piece on like how to get your resume past the HR department, and like just went into rant mode. And I'm like, wow, I have a really unhealthy negativity there. And like going back into John's stuff, like helped me put that into a perspective that's a little bit less toxic.
I will say this. You don't have to be in development to despise HR.
Right. But it's not useful.
Yeah, it's true. It's not. But I'm just saying it's like a brief story as to my frustrations with HR. When I was working at a local hospital in their psych department, I transferred to another department, like to the admissions office, for a semester while I was in school. And then I saw, oh, hey, they've got an opening for day shift where I can do that, because all my classes were in the evening. Like, oh, I can go back. So I applied to the exact same position I'd had before for 4 years, and got a letter from HR saying I wasn't qualified to do the job. That I had been doing that for earlier. 4 years. Yeah.
But, you know, it's like you internalize lots of negative stuff as a way to protect yourself. And sometimes it's not useful when you get further along. And that's one thing that's really helped me a lot, is, you know, unpacking a lot of that through, you know, listening to John's material. So, yeah, I would heartily recommend everything he's got, pretty much. Just go buy it all.
He's like a therapist for developers.
He really is. Like, yeah.
Yeah, he really is.
He's pretty awesome. Yeah. I don't have another way to put that. So,
and a lot of people don't like him for some reason. I don't understand why. Maybe it's because he's
positive.
And super positive. I don't know.
You know, the thing is, like, one thing you also learn, too, is that when you start getting out in front of other people throw rocks at your back. I mean, it's just like this tribalistic monkey. So, speaking of which, you didn't have any other resources that haven't helped you?
Well, early on, I got a book that had been highly recommended to me called Eloquent.js. And I think everybody in the JavaScript community knows about this book. But it's not a beginner book. It kind of says it is, but it's not. The guy, I guess it's a curse of knowledge thing. The guy is so genius in the way that he writes this book that he just doesn't realize that we can't follow him. Especially coming from where I was coming from. It is a great book, and it's like I get a little further with it. Every time I go through it, I get a little further to understand a little more. But it really discouraged me because I took that book and I said, I can't understand this. Maybe I'm stupid. And I see a lot of other people do that. If you're a beginner or even just an advanced beginner or intermediate, that's not the best book for you. I guess it was a good experience with Code Academy, but it kind of gives you a false sense of mastery. It's a little too easy, although they've been changing. I think they have a premium plan, which is a lot better now.
Yeah, they do. They actually have a Code Academy Pro where you get more resource help and kind of paths to learning rather than just being thrown out there to it.
Well, yeah, in their defense, it was totally free. And so you can't really complain about what they give you. But I think a lot of people would go there, hey, this is not so hard. And then they get into the real world and go, oh, wait a minute, what happened? I don't know anything.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean, man.
Yeah, at least you ran into stuff that wasn't optimal for you at the moment. Yeah, I mean, that's the big thing is a lot of times you can look at it and go, okay, this isn't going to work for me right now, but I can circle back later.
Well, I took it hard, man. The reason I mention it is because I took it hard with Elk and JS. You know, you get a book and you go through the honeymoon period with it and you're like, man, I'm going to sit down and I'm going to figure this out, right? And I'm going to go through every chapter and I'm going to understand it one step at a time. And by the end, I'm going to be a JavaScript ninja. No, not with this book, at least.
Yeah, but a lot of times, I mean, what I've found too is you run into something that's too hard and then you go and you find the stuff you need to learn that and then you come back to it.
Yeah, I've got it. The book's sitting there waiting for me to go through it again. And every time I do, I get a little further. There's nothing wrong with Elk and JS other than people recommend it as a beginner book and it is not.
People's recommendations on the internet. Holy crap. That's
whole can of worms.
Yeah. So, given that, how's the job search going?
Just got an email back a couple days ago from the first place I applied. And apparently, training I got with Udacity about how to apply for jobs, write cover letters, write a good resume actually worked. Because my very first try, I now have a phone interview on Thursday with it's called Applied Imagination. It's just a small web agency about 10 minutes up the road from where I live. So
congratulations.
I'm got my fingers crossed with that. And we'll see what happens. See if I flub the phone interview or.
Yeah, don't even let that enter your head, man.
I'm trying not to, but I've already done one phone interview and I actually got that one by going to the official JavaScript meetup. First time I had ever, gone, there was somebody there looking for a front end web developer. A UI front end developer. And they have a huge Java backend. So they were specifically looking for someone that just did front end and would interface with their JSON API. And so I met the director of that company personally while I was at their meetup, and he was handing out applications and whatnot. And so I got it. He called me after looking at my resume and my projects briefly. I thought I had failed the phone interview initially, and he emailed me back and said, hey, would you mind doing a co-challenge for me? He said, the problem we're having is, you're a junior and we'd like to have a lead engineer that could mentor you before we actually hire you. So I said, sure, I'll do the code challenge. And I did. And it's on my list. It's a regex tester. And I went way beyond the call of duty. I made the regex tester work from the back end using Express. And then injected the data into a little pop-up box on the front end. You can look at that project. I'll give Beach the links.
Alrighty.
And so he never got back with me. I turned it in and silence is weird. He didn't say he disapproved or approves. Hopefully he's just busy. People are fickle that way, I guess. And that's been my experience, really. And then a bunch of annoying recruiters.
Lord have mercy on that
one, too. So, talking about that phone interview, I know I've mentioned this on the show before, but I did want to say that going into the interview for the job that I have now, I got a call from my sister on the drive there telling me that my dad had fallen and broken his hip, asking if I could drive about an hour and a half to come visit him. And then when I got there, the recruiter that was supposed to meet me called and told me that her car broke down, so she wasn't even going to be able to walk me in and introduce me to people. I just said, you know, this is not going to work out. It's not going to be a good interview. I'm just going to treat it like a practice interview and get some practice so that I'll be good for the next one.
That's a good way to look at it.
Yeah, and what's really cool is like 2 days later, they called with an offer.
Wow.
I remember that. When you called, you're like, I got it on the practice interview. What happened?
You're not supposed to get it on the practice interview, but that's why you probably got it. That's exactly why you got it, because it calmed you down, right?
Yeah, it really did. Like, I had told Will about it and that I just didn't expect to get anything from it because it was a practice interview with all that stuff going on. But, you know, when they called me, I really liked what I had heard when I was there. And, you know, it was a great decision. I love my job and I'm really happy that worked out. So do you have any advice for someone getting started?
One of the big things that I did, which really wasted a lot of time, almost a year's worth of time getting nowhere, is waffling back and forth between technologies. Like, hey, Ruby looks cool. That's really what seems like, you know, the thing to learn. Or no, it's Python. No, it's this or that. They're all similar. Once you get into it, they're all pretty similar. Stick to something. It doesn't matter what. Just pick something and stick to it till you know the fundamentals and you've got them cold. And once you get to that point, once you can do if statements and loops and know what objects are and, you know, all that basic stuff, then you can branch out to other things. And I'm just now getting to the point where I feel comfortable enough to learn another programming language. But I can tell you one thing. Once you get the fundamentals, the second language is just different syntax and it's the same. If it's a scripting language.
You know, that's really interesting because I've actually heard the opposite, where learning your first language is hard, but learning your second language is harder because you've learned certain ways of thinking with the first one. And after that, it's just learning syntax.
Well, like the first time you're learning how to code, the second time you're learning how to learn how to code in a language. And then after that, you kind of, I mean, that's been my experience because I went through GW Basic, Visual Basic, VBA, VB.NET, C Sharp, Ruby, Python, JavaScript, Delphi. Yeah.
Wow, that's a lot.
Yeah, I mean, it's just over the years, you know. Oh, I forgot C and C++ back in school and Java. I mean, I've done a little bit of everything. And after a while, it just like the general principles kind of come in. And you're okay until you get to functional programming and people start talking about monads and you have no idea what they're saying.
Is that related to gonads? You got to have gonads to do monads?
Yeah, exactly.
It's just lambda calculus, man.
Yeah, there's some F-sharp developer out there that's just twitching at this whole conversation. Like, it's not that hard, man.
Yeah, I mean, I know a little bit of functional programming just from doing JavaScript, and there's so much of that peppered through it.
Yeah.
I don't really know what to call any of it, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I don't either. It's like design patterns. Like, you get a feel for the thing, and then eventually you get a name for what you've been doing this whole time, and then you can express it to other people. Yeah, I've been there, man. The like jumping between languages is definitely something I've seen a lot of people. We see that actually with the developer launchpad groups. There'll be some people in there that can do like Hello World in 10 different languages.
Yeah, that doesn't help.
But it's like nobody's going to pay you to do that. So no.
Yeah, but it's an easy mistake to make. It's so easy to make, like, because in the very beginning, you know, you're all excited. You want to learn everything. You want to learn all the things right now, and you can't. You're not superhuman. And so until you figure that out, you do that for a while. I mean, most people eventually figure out they're wasting their time. But it would be better if you just learn that straight out and just listen to everyone else who's already been through it and don't do that. Just anybody who says that, oh, this is a better, you should start with this one over that one, that's a distraction. I didn't know that. I was listening to people tell me, this is a cooler language or that's better for this. And I didn't know what to think. And so just pick something. It could be PHP. If you want to be a sadomasochist, you can pick PHP, but just pick one, stick to it.
A little bit of what I'm talking about in my talk tomorrow is the different types of traps you can run into when you're learning to code. And one of those is the Hello World expert, you know, the person that can write Hello World in 15 to 20 different languages and never gets any deeper because they're constantly attracted to the new and shiny. And related to that is the perpetual student, the person that is more proud of being a student or of learning programming than of actually building something.
And we never run into those kind of people at meetups, ever.
Well, I essentially don't like programming to program. Actually, I know this sounds trite because other people have said it before, but it's true. It's a means to an end. I like to build stuff. If it's with pipe, you know, or if it's with, you know, if I'm a carpenter or whatever the medium is, it's just a means to an end. The fruits of my labor, that's what it's about. You stand back and say, I built that. And it's rewarding, you know?
Well, from the people that we've talked to, the ones that are the most successful at it say that they got into programming because they wanted to build something.
Yeah. And you can still play with new techniques when you're doing that. But
yeah, but what's the point if you're not going to build anything?
Yeah. Well, the other thing, too, is like, how do you know that the technique is any good if you don't actually apply it in the real world? It's like martial arts. You know, you can do really pretty, you know, jumping backflip kicks and stuff. And, you know, like you can be a stunt double in a movie, but you get a street fight and you do that, you're going to die.
Yep.
And it's that contact with reality that gives a thing.
Well, you know, the other thing about it is if you learn a bunch of theory, we'll say, or a bunch of techniques or examples that have been removed from the real world setting, you have no context to use it. Like, you have no idea what any of it's for. And so the only way to know that is to build something and then hit a brick wall and go, well, I'm stuck. How do I get unstuck?
Yeah, exactly. So, Jason, we have one final question for you, and this is a bit of a speculative one. What are your plans when you finally land your first job?
I'm expecting my first job to be extremely stressful because no matter how much I've prepared myself, I'm still going to be way behind. So I'm just going to keep my head down and learn everything I can and not worry about the rest. Try to keep up with the other things I've got going, you know, writing on my blog and maybe trying, you know, take a break and do some other things that I enjoy, like music, playing video games. But generally just keep my head down and just not let up, because I just have a feeling that first job is going to be pretty overwhelming. I've got no illusions about that.
That sounds very realistic. So, Jason, we want to thank you for being our first in this series of A Developer's Journey. And guys, be on the lookout for more developer journeys coming out later this year. Before we close everything out, though, Will, what do you have for us this week for Tricks of the Trade?
Well, I just want to kind of hammer home the point that Jason brought up. He brought up at one point. And that is actually testing what you're doing against reality. This is something a lot of developers don't seem to do very well. You'll see this a lot, I guess, like with mid-levels more than anything. They get a new framework. They decide it's the best thing ever, or Linux is the best thing ever, or whatever it is. But they don't actually go and apply that skill. So they'll decide that, you know, like for instance, Ruby on Rails is the best thing ever. And they build the simple tutorial apps and they go through a whole bunch of those, and Ruby's still the best thing ever, but they've not produced anything with it. And I want to caution everybody that that's a really dangerous way to go through life, because until you really try to build a real application, it's just simply not real. You don't have an idea of where the framework lets you down, or the kind of mistakes you tend to make, or where, you know, the framework really shines, but you got to do it a different way from the way the books teach you. You don't really get that until you get that real visceral exposure to reality. You know, I've told people before that building an app with the tutorials is like a movie choreographed sword fight, and building a real app with a language that you barely know is like a drunken knife fight on ice. It's a completely different experience, and you got to figure out how to survive it. That will put you in contact with reality a whole lot faster. That's what I've got.
Stand by for Titanfall.
If you have a question or comment for us, please email us at neckbeards@completedeveloperpodcast.com. Our theme music is an excerpt from Stand By for Titanfall by Pure Bells, available on SoundCloud and licensed under Creative Commons. The intro music for IoTs is Hillbilly Hip Hop by Jason Belcher. For references, show notes, and to sign up to our email list, be sure and check out the website at CompleteDeveloperPodcast.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at CompleteDevPod and like our page on Facebook to keep up with the news about the show. Thanks for listening. See you next time.